views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Welcome to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek. Marge was searching for the purpose of her life and the truth that would tie everything together to make sense of what was taught and what was happening on our planet, the fire that was creating all the smoke. Through many experiences, she was finally led to the knowledge book that provided all the answers. Marge is now talking about this gift to humanity on Knowledge Book Radio, so all can be united in peace, love, and harmony. This live call-in show at 1-800-930-2819 is amazing. So get ready to hear about the knowledge book. Here's your host, Marge Potasek.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marge Potasek, and you are listening to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek on Transformation Talk Radio. For the next hour, we will continue our series of Omega Talks, and these are usually given on the fourth Tuesday of every month. And this is a part of a project, which is a part of the unification program of the Call to Friendship Association that's mentioned in the Knowledge Book. Now, what's happening with these talks is that when we talk about certain world topics, whatever they are, we connect that topic on the scientific side, and we connect that to the spirituality by discussing world knowledge and connecting it to the Omega Dimension. Now, the Omega Dimension is the 19th dimension, and this dimension has been opened to our planet and to our world through the knowledge book, and this is happening for the first time. Okay, so this time, the topic for these Omega Talks, Omega's Talk Series, is about Picasso and his evolution in art. Now, before we go on, I'd like to remind you that the United States website for the programs and studies and obtaining the knowledge book is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. Again, www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. The Turkish World Brotherhood Union website is www.dkb-mevlana.org.tr. And this is also the website where you can get the actual schedule for the reading program. Of course, my contact information is 973-787-7035. For texting and telephone calls, and mmjp99@gmail.com, marymaryjohnpeter99@gmail.com. For again, emailing any questions you may have, any suggestions for topics you may have, or any comments you may have about this show or any previous show. The actual website for the Call to Friendship organization, and this is located in Turkey, is www.calltofriendship.org. Again, www.calltofriendship.org. Okay, so that handles all the little items that we need to cover before we go into our actual talk. So please do email or text me with any kind of questions that you may have, any comments that you may have about today's topic or from previous shows. Okay, so today the topic is Picasso and his evolution in art. Now, the art historians that study artists' progression, as far as their art is concerned, have put Picasso in certain categories throughout his life. Now, he actually was born in 1881 on October 25th in Malaga on the southern Spanish coast. Now, his full name was Pablo Ruiz Picasso. And of course, if you look it up on the internet, there's many, many more names in between, but they shortened it here to Pablo Ruiz Picasso. He actually started his art studies when he was 7. And he actually produced his first painting, which is called Le Picador, at the age of 9. He himself characterized himself in this quote, "I never drew like a child. When I was 12, I drew like Raphael." He actually produced his first self-portrait when he was 15 years old. He eventually died in 1973, and he produced a tremendous amount of work. And that work spanned painting, sculpting, ceramics, poetry, stage design, writing, and rug and tapestry design. He was tremendously prolific throughout his long lifetime. He produced about 50,000 pieces of art. 1,885 were paintings, 1,228 were sculptures, 2,880 were ceramics, almost 12,000 drawings, and thousands of prints, and many tapestries and rugs. So he worked a tremendous amount of time, produced tremendous amount of art. Now, the first stage that historians place him in, art historians place him in, is his early work. And this is where he started as an artist, as a career in, as an artist in 1894. And here he is using a realist style. He is being taught by his father and with the classical approach, traditional academic approach to painting, meaning you are using whatever you see in nature, whatever you see around you. And the colors that are in the paintings are basically the colors that he saw. There was no change of color. There is no change in figure. He is depicting figures beautifully and in the color that he sees. So he made paintings of his loved ones, his family, and whatever he saw in church. So his actual roots were nature and the realistic representation of nature. So his first step as an artist was to look around and represent what he saw in nature around himself. Okay. Now, from the early work until 1897, his paintings became less realistic. In other words, he put into here, the faces were not quite as distinct. The features were not quite as distinct. The depiction of the clothes were also not quite distinct. And he seemed to be influenced by expressionists and post-impressionist painters. And this started in 1897. So he was more free and going into an avant-garde style, something that's like out of the usual and out of nature. And his quote on this particular phase is, "The artist is a receptacle for emotions that come from all over the place, from the sky, from the earth, from a scrap of paper, from a passing shape, from a spider's web." So again, we see here that he is being influenced and takes his inspiration from the things around him. However, he's beginning to depict these things that he sees around him in a different style, and that's more impressionistic and post-impressionistic. Okay. Then comes the Blue Period, what the art historians call the Blue Period. That's 1901 to 1904. Now, during this time, he was living with a friend, and that friend died. So that became a tremendous influence on him because the person actually committed suicide. So he became depressed, and the paintings he produced here are still depicting what he sees around himself. However, the way he depicts these, what he sees around himself, is in blue, in the various shades of blue. The people that are being depicted are the people who are living in poverty or in despair. the figures, the bodies are actually showing that they are starving, that they were undergoing very, very hard times. So by 1904, Picasso's depression started to lift and he produced more upbeat paintings. So again, even though he's still depicting what he sees around himself, again, he switches it into something that's different and something that's blue that actually depicted his feelings. Then came the Rose period, and that was between 1904 and 1906. And this time, Picasso moved to France, to Paris, France, and he lived in Montmartre. And this was a bohemian district in France, in Paris. So again, he's painting figures, he's painting people. However, he's beginning to have his own particular style. However, the colors that he is using here have more of a warm tone. They have more rosy, more red, more orange, more yellow colors to them. Again, he was influenced by his environment, and he went and shifted his focus from individuals living in despair. And because he wasn't in that particular bohemian section in Paris, what he depicted were entertainers like harlequins, acrobats, and circus performers. So again, the influence is from outside of himself here. Now, then comes the African period. This is from 1906 and 1909. This is something that the art historians have categorized based on his output throughout his life. Now, after the 3 years after the Rose period, Picasso was inspired by oceanic and African art. And then this became known as his African period. He continued to keep the warmth of the tones that he was using, meaning yellows and oranges and reds and pinks. But he shifted his style so that the faces that he was depicting had more of a characteristic of an African mask. And he started to depict abstracted African mask-inspired depictions of all kinds of figures, from prostitutes to his own self-image, self-portrait. And again, if you imagine African masks, this is how Picasso began to paint at this particular point in time. And again, there was a shift. Between 1908 to 1914, he became influenced by the simplification and fragmentation found in primitive art, and therefore was inspired to move on to his next and most famous phase, which is Cubism. Now, this is a genre that features subject matter broken down into fractured forms. So you'll see facets of figures, you'll see facets of objects. And this, both Picasso and George Braque pioneered this renowned and important art movement. It has two primary phases, analytical and synthetic. Now the analytical is from 1908 to 1912, and this is characterized by monochromatic, topsy-turvy canvases full of overlapping geometric forms. Now, these forms were arranged in fragments from the subject matter, which is often unrealistically depicted from multiple angles at once. So you'll see faces and objects, just facets of them being portrayed. The actual character is broken down into facets. Just like a diamond has many facets, his depiction of figures and objects became faceted just like a diamond. Cubism, then, for the second part, is 1908 to 1914. Now, this cubist form is unlike the analytical cubist because the synthetic cubist style, which is the second portion or the second phase of his cubist period, here, this was characterized by simplified polychromatic canvases that were inspired by collage art. And instead of depicting anything realistically, he was then influenced by abstraction, by something taking a facet or taking a character out of that depiction and portraying that. And this officially lasted until 1914, though he would actually still continue to work in this style, in Cubist style, until the 1920s. Then Picasso visited Italy, and this became his neoclassicism, or 1917-1925 period. So here he was exposed to Italian Renaissance artists, and he gradually shifted away from synthetic cubism, and this was to, he became an artist that depicted things, depicted what he saw around him in a neoclassical style, meaning it is much closer to what he saw as the product of Greek and Roman sculpture. And again, he was influenced by Italian artists' paintings of figures and shifted what is called the neoclassic period. And he produced paintings that he actually can't see what the people are. However, they're more rounded and they still have the natural colors of what he saw around himself. Then he jumped into surrealism, and this was from 1925 to 1932. And again, he went back to abstraction. He moved away from natural representation. And he had his own style, which is now they're calling surrealist. And this was characterized by dreamy depictions of figures with disorganized facial features and twisted bodies. This surreal quality was brought out by his using an unnatural palette of bright tones and clashing colors, as well as a skewed sense of perspective and a contrast between organic and geometric forms. When you look at these paintings, even though the titles may tell you what this is, however, the depiction does not match what the title is. Woman in a striped chair. Well, there is something that looks like blue with polka dots on it, and there's something that looks like slats around it, and that's it. Woman in a wooden chair, you sort of can imagine that there's something that maybe is a figure with a head, and maybe it has a child, but the piece of wood is something contorted and is something completely different that you would see when you're looking, when you're thinking of woman in a chair. This is not what most people would actually see. Girl throwing a rock, again, you've got two spheres. You cannot tell where the arm is. You cannot see what is going on in this picture. A weeping woman, okay, you can see tears. However, the colors are red, orange, yellow, green, gray, black. They're neon colors, they're contrasting colors, and no way, shape, and form actually look like anything that is existing in nature. So Picasso is not thought of as a surrealist painter. However, his paintings from this period did make major contributions to the movement. Okay, then comes his late period. After his surrealist period and until his death in 1973, he continued to paint. He continued to produce all kinds of paintings and all kinds of art. However, in this case, unlike his previous work, what he produced this time are not categorized into certain styles. Actually, they contain different elements of his previous styles, and he kind of merged them into something that is his own particular style. So it was neither neoclassical, and it was neither blue, neither a rose, or African, or cubist. However, he merged all these into one particular style or many variations of his particular style. And it seemed like an endless source of inspiration to produce whatever he produced during the last part of his life. Now, we've covered, you know, what the art historians have classified as his periods, as his phases of how he developed from age 7, age 12, up until age 90. So what do we got? We've got number one is early period, and here are the influences from nature. Then we have the blue period, and here the influence is from depression. Then came the rose period, and here the influence came from the bohemian surroundings, the acrobats, the circus performers, and the prostitutes that were around him. Then came the African period. Again, this the influence came from African art, African masks. Then came the two phases of the Cubist period. The first one was analytical, when things came in in facets, in little portions, being the figure itself or the object itself being broken down into facets and presented that way. And then came the Cubist period, which was a synthetic one. And again, this came from as an influence from a different art movement, and where things are flat and presented more like a collage than anything else. Then his seventh period, is the neoclassicism period. And here the influence came from Italian art masters. Then came the eight, which is the surrealist period. And here again, he's going outside the natural influence into the extraordinary and fantastic. So what he is depicting becomes unrecognizable to us, despite the fact that he names what he is painting. Then came the late works, which is the ninth stage, and this is a melding and the use of all the previous styles. And here the influence comes from within, from 1 through 7. There are outside influences that are impacting him, and he is changing based on those outside influences, while in the eighth, he himself starts then to go into the extraordinary and fantastic and supernatural or supernatural depictions of whatever he sees. And then in the late, number 9 stage, he melds everything all together. He puts it all together. And here the influence now comes from his own consciousness, from his own essence, comes from within. Okay, now, there are some famous quotes that we have from him. And it's very interesting. Others have seen what is and asked why, is one of them. I see what could be and ask why not. So you could see how he is approaching things from a completely different angle, completely different mindset. And in terms of how many art pieces he actually produced, his basis is, and I quote, "I am always doing that which I cannot do in order that I may learn how to do it." So again, he is always going into something new, something different, experimenting, questing, figure things out, and moving onward. And here is another quote, "Art is a lie that makes us realize the truth." Interesting, because any piece of art that you encounter, there is some physical reaction, some kind of a psychological, physical, spiritual reaction you have to that piece of art. And sometimes that art can hit certain points in you that you never could have realized before outside of actually seeing that. Another quote, "Everything is a miracle. It is a miracle that one does not dissolve in one's bath like a lump of sugar." So when you think about us, when you think of all the component parts of us, and they all are chemical elements, they're all natural elements, carbon, oxygen, phosphorus, iron, manganese, magnesium, sodium, chloride, all of these, somehow we are held together, something holds us together, something pieces us together, and even despite the fact that water is a universal solvent, we do not dissolve. We stay as a totality. And this is very interesting, the next one, is because it seems to explain what it is that he's been doing as a painter, as an artist, depicting the objects around him. "I paint objects as I see them, not I paint objects as I think them, not as I see them. So here we can see that it's the internal inspiration, it's the internal consciousness that allows him to basically show what he thinks should be shown. And in terms of his prodigious output, and many have heard that inspiration does exist, that inspiration is out there, that the muses are out there, and basically you breathe in whatever idea or work of art you produce. And he says, inspiration exists, but you have to find it working, meaning you have to be working at something for an idea to come in, for something to come in order to produce something. Now, when we looked at this bird's eye view of Picasso's development and growth, it becomes very clear that the first seven periods were triggered by some external trigger, something outside of himself, whether it was depression because of the friend's suicide, whether it's influences from the French quarters that he lived in, whether it's influences from the African masks, whatever the influences were from Cubism, whatever the influences were, they were actually outside of himself, and the source of the inspiration was outside of himself. It also seems that in the last two stages, he had put himself together, he had unified himself and was working from his essence. So he went from a truly naturalistic expression and depiction of a human face or whatever he was depicting to something which is his most famous work of art, to Guernica, which is very hard to decipher what it is and how it is put together. So, as with everything, I have questions. And Picasso's evolution raises a lot of questions. Is he the only one with this pattern? Is this progression from the inside, from the outside to the inside, what happens with everyone? Are the number of steps significant? Are they always 9, 1 through 7, and then 8, 9? And how does an artist, a writer, a composer create their art? And can anyone be a Picasso? How does an artist become one? Are they born that way or are they taught? And where does the creative spark originate? Now, as usual, when one is reading the knowledge book and there is a question in one's mind, there is always an answer provided. So the answer given by the knowledge book is this: art, just like every dimension, has 9 layers. Since there is a gradual progression of each dimension, the evolution and the creative power is different between the first step and the last step. So if you're at the entry level of a particular art, whether that's sewing or painting or sculpture or literature or whatever it is that your particular art that you are developing and learning, there you will always be different from when you first started to when you're more advanced in this development. And as we've seen with Picasso's growth, at first the influence comes from nature. And eventually, as he evolved and progressed, he was influenced by higher energies and different aspects came into his paintings. And as we saw with his Cubist, and especially the Surreal period, the influence came from above nature, like being connected to spirits, angels, and space. Something extraordinary. So, according to the knowledge book, once you've gone through the first 7 layers of the dimension, you are then able to merge with the essence energy of that dimension and are then able to unify your previous incarnations and are able to portray this whole personality by the power of the reflection of the essence. And as we saw in the last two stages of his inspiration came from inside, not the outside. The products of his art came from his consciousness and his essence. Now, many artists have spoken of having an idea that they received in their either dreams or pictures in their heads, and they were literally inspired. They breathed in whatever that idea was, and some have said that they've been given gifts as a gift from the muses or the 9 muses. This was in Greek mythology. These are the muses that give ideas and inspire artists. And these are ideas that came in from the creative power based on and in accordance with their evolution and then present their art to others. Now, specifically in the knowledge book, fascicle supplement number 4, again, the answer is the dimension that is up to the 7th layer of each art is called the immortality layer of that art. After this layer, the human consciousness leaves the dimension of form and integrates his herself with the energies beyond form. And the essence consciousness claims his her actual art, and by connecting his her own creative power to his her essence power, he is then released from the mechanism of influences. So we go after the first 7 layers, we get released from the external influences. And the very genuine artists are those who exhibit their own essence consciousness forms beyond the power of influence, like Picasso and Salvador Dali. And this is where we see his surrealistic period and the later part, the late stages of his life, where he combined everything all together and put it all together and depicted things in a different way. And again, continuing with fascicle supplement 4, every art produces works of art parallel to the public consciousness it is in. We cannot do something outside of what we're living and the medium and the environment that we're living. And each artist exhibits works of art parallel to the evolution consciousness he has reached. Again, the first 7 layers of the 9 layers in each dimension aren't included, are subject to the influences. The other 2 layers are the reflections of the essence. The first 7 layers of each dimension are training and educating layers, but the 8th and 9th layers are dimensions of conveyance. Those who are able to receive the entire energy totality of each dimension reach the destination. This destination is a schedule, an evolution plan, according to the public consciousness of each period. So what did Picasso do? Picasso succeeded. So when we compare what the knowledge book describes and Picasso's life and artistic evolution, we can clearly see that Picasso reached the destination by going beyond form, beyond the first 7 artistic periods. He achieved his true personality and worked from his essence consciousness during the latter part of his life. And this consists basically about 40 years of his life out of his 50 years. Was Picasso a special person? Can anyone do what Picasso achieved? Well, it's both a yes and a no. Although we can't all produce works of art like Picasso, we can follow his example and live our destinies. What Picasso did is what I would characterize what Joseph Campbell said, is follow your bliss. Picasso followed his conscience. He accepted the influences given to him and worked to incorporate those energies into his art and life. He didn't reject something else that was new because he only wanted to stay with what he knew and what he was comfortable with. He went ahead and incorporated anything that came at him, whether it was depression, whether it was where he was living, whether it was, you know, Italian artists, whatever it was, or African masks, whatever it was that came into his life, he embraced, he incorporated, he met it with a smile on his face, in the sense of accepting these influences and working with these influences to develop his art further and further. And the other part that he did, which we can follow, is that he was listening to his inner voice and not to conditioned consciousnesses. Many people have only one way of doing things. In other words, my father did it this way, my grandfather did it this way, my great-grandfather did it this way, and I'm going to continue to do it this way. Picasso was not one of those who was a traditionalist in the sense that he stuck with whatever he learned first and would not go forward. So his path was the path of learning and science. And step by step, he followed his own plan of destiny because he came in and he was born just like us with his own plan of destiny as to what he would need to do, the influences that he would meet in his life to be able for him to become fully accomplished and succeed in his life. So he worked and developed his talent and progressed on his evolutionary path, at first in accordance with external energies, and later, having unified into a complete whole, he worked from his essence. So again, he was not a traditionalist or very conservative. He is the one who basically met what came at him and used whatever came at him to develop his art. And little by little, step by step, stage by stage, he was able to evolve and be the Picasso that we know, and the Picasso that produced this tremendous amount of work and art. Frankly, I was actually very surprised because I did not know that he also produced rugs and tapestries and sculpture. Now, part of the sculpture was ceramics, and the ceramics, there were dishes that he produced. He produced, you know, tableware. He produced goblets. He produced vases. He produced all kinds of things. So it's amazing as to what he was able to accomplish in the time that he had on this planet. So what about the rest of us? We're all come into this world with our own particular plan of destinies. And all of us, Picasso and every one of us, comes in with this guardian that is responsible, or guardians that are responsible for helping us and guiding us. And these guardians are connected to the mechanism of influences. Now, we'll talk about the mechanism of influence a little bit, but anyway, basically, these guardians, they're responsible for our evolutionary path. Now, if you're expecting them to let you know what the winning combination is in the lotto or Powerball or whatever it is, or who's going to win in the race, or what stocks to pick so you could get rich quick, don't expect the guardians to help you, because that is not their job. Their job is to guard you and to guide you on your evolutionary path, meaning making sure that we go through the experiences that we need to go through in order to learn our lessons, in order for us to be able to develop as humans, to evolve as humans, and get ourselves to the point where we can succeed in becoming genuine humans. Now, the mechanism of influence is defined in the glossary of the knowledge book as: it is the mechanism that conveys the cosmic influences parallel to the evolution of our world from the 10th dimension. It is also defined as the power focal point of the function which will activate different systems. So basically, the mechanism of influences is a source of energy, is a source of cosmic energy, is a source of cosmic frequencies that are given to humans. And depending on the human's own level of evolution, depending on the human's status as far as their evolution is concerned, those energies, those frequencies activate certain centers in us, activate certain seeds that were planted in us, and we develop and we grow and we progress step by step. So each one of us has been given a design path through which we can succeed. Because the knowledge book actually trains us up to the seventh layer by projecting on us from the close plan, meaning from the book itself and through the experiences, the energies of the seven layers within Omega by its special light photon cyclone technique. Again, the knowledge book gives us those energies, those frequencies, specifically at our own particular level of energy, frequency, evolution, consciousness. And furthermore, it blocks anything that could be detrimental to us or too much for us, or that could shake us. So we are always protected, we are always guided, we are always given that which we need when we need it to be able to succeed. And then once we've gone through the first seven layers of every dimension and any dimension, then we ourselves then get to the destination, because at that point we're able to attract the energies in the eighth and ninth layers of Omega through our own thought powers. So if one through seven, outside influences, as we've seen through Picasso, and he becomes like a textbook case for evolution. And this not only covers art, it covers every dimension, no matter dimension, whatever dimension we're going through. It covered what we were going through as far as the Old Testament was concerned. It covered what we were going through as far as the New Testament was concerned, as far as the Quran is concerned. First seven stages are always training and educating from the outside, influences from the outside. And then the last two stages, the eighth and the ninth, eighth, we absorb the totality of the energies that are in that dimension. We become the experts in that dimension. And then in the ninth layer, we are able then to go from that dimension and pass the test going into the next dimension. Again, we start all over again at layer one, go through one through seven external influences. Then comes, we merge with the totality of that dimension at the eighth. And the ninth, we jump to the next dimension. Anyone who is able to receive the entire frequency of the knowledge book in this final age will reach the destination. And now it's time to take a short break, and we will continue with the discussion of Picasso when we come back. Again, the U.S. website is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. Telephone number is 973-787-7035. Email address is mmjp99@gmail.com, marymaryjohnpeter@gmail.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tune in to The Astral Insider, your portal for adventure, insight, and growth with Fernando Albert. And get ready to tour the astral realm, expand your life in ways you've never imagined, and call in for the journey of your life with this world-renowned lucid dreamer, astral projectionist, psychic medium, and healer, Fernando Albert. This is every second and fourth Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
A word of caution, if you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Hi, I'm Jane Matanga with Grow Your Soul Radio. It's been said that whatever you believe, you are. When you take charge with your positive thoughts and beliefs, you are the creator of your perceptions. You have the power to shift your reality. When you begin to shift your beliefs, the universe will dream a bigger dream for you than you ever imagined. Believe in your dreams, and every part of your world can open up in new and glorious ways, because everything is possible. I'd love for you to join me on Grow Your Soul Radio with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Are you ready to finally feel empowered and knowledgeable in your political stance? Let Marsha Padilla Goad educate you on exactly how important grassroots advocacy is in a relatable way to all perspectives. Tune in to Grassroots Advocacy Radio with Marsha every first Tuesday of the month at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Visit DynamicsInPublicAffairs.com.
you're back on Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik on Transformation Talk Radio. And again, a reminder, the United States website is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. Telephone number for texting or calling in terms of comments, questions, suggestions, 973-787-7035. Email address mmjp99@gmail.com. Again, that's marymaryjohnpeter99@gmail.com. Would like to recommend to you the Call to Friendship website, which is www.calltofriendship.org. And there is also a website called World Unification Call to Friendship.org, and that is www.worldunification.calltofriendship. I forgot whether it's .org or .net, but if you type in World Unification, then that will pop up. So, and that particular website gives you information for the next Congress for Call to Friendship that takes place in Turkey on June 21st, 22nd, and 23rd of every year. This started back 3 years ago, so it'll be the third Congress, and this will continue working. And part of the, what's going on with the Call to Friendship Association is basically associating and connecting every knowledge that is on this planet in the third dimension, every knowledge to the knowledge book magnetic field, and everything will be connected to the knowledge book and unified in the knowledge book, and we will all be unified as a totality. So let's review it a little bit. And when we're talking about Picasso, one of the questions that was asked when I did this presentation, you know, in front of people, not on the radio, but in front of an actual audience, someone asked, so what's that got to do with me? That's Picasso. That's not me. How does that affect me? And basically the answer is that every one of us goes through the same steps in everything that we learn. In the first stages, we are dependent on outside teachers and outside guidance, whether we're learning how to cook, we're learning to clean, whether we're learning to paint, and that's whether artistic painting as an oil painting or painting inside of a home or the outside of a home or painting cars, whatever it is, whether we're learning landscaping or horticulture or sewing or crocheting or knitting or dentistry or law or government or writing or whatever topic that we are covering, whatever we are learning, we go through these seven phases, one after the other. And when we go step by step through these phases, we may not be exactly conscious of it, but we are learning step by step, and in each step with no more than we did before. And we go gradually rise up to the point that we are become an expert, and we become merged with that entire dimension. We become merged with that totality of that knowledge. And then we use that knowledge. We use what we have learned before. We integrate with it, with that energy of that dimension. And we are then able to connect with our essence consciousness and produce works of art, or produce that work from our essence consciousness, and continue working that way. Now, every lifetime, it seems that Picasso was already born a genius. But we've got to keep in mind that we were only witnessing his last lifetime where he actually portrayed his genius. We forget the fact that this last lifetime where he produced his 50,000 pieces of works of art was the culmination of many previous incarnations where he actually was honing his skills. To me, it looks like those first seven stages, maybe initially he was learning how to paint naturalistic paintings, meaning depicting everything he saw in nature, perfecting his skill, perfecting his arts, you know, the strokes, perfecting color combinations, perfecting the composition of a painting. He, lifetime by lifetime, went through and learned certain portions of his art, and eventually he would die in that lifetime, having learned maybe from 1 through 6 or 1 through 5 of the stages. And then the next lifetime, he would start where he left off, meaning he would be going through and producing works of art, maybe had a quick review of the previous teachings that he had, and then continue developing and developing and developing. Now, I don't know if anyone has seen Groundhog Day now with Murray. And basically, this person, who's a weather forecaster, wakes up every morning at 5:59 a.m., wakes up in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, coming to interview and see, you know, Punxsutawney Phil, and see whether there's going to be 6 more weeks of winter. So he wakes up every morning at the same time. And over having each time the day progresses, each time during the day that progresses, he learns something. And he's able then to basically be eventually at the perfect location to catch somebody falling from a tree, to be able to know not to step in that off the curb at a particular place because there's a big hole there. He's able to help people when they need help, and he's able to eventually learn how to play the piano and eventually lead an orchestra. So what we're seeing in Picasso, we're not automatically born into something that is a genius. We gradually get to that place through the many incarnations that we go through. And this also holds true for us as far as our own evolution is concerned. We've all gone through various stages of religious training. We've gone through various stages of Old Testament, New Testament, Quran, and right now the knowledge book. So we are going through everything step by step, and at each place and each dimension, we are trained in the first 7, and then we merge at the 8 and are able to go on to the next dimension from the 9th. We could also think of it as basically like going to school. In the first grade, we do math. But in the first grade, we go to school every year, and every year we learn a little bit more. So in the first grade, we do math, addition, subtraction, multiplication, eventually fractions. We go up and up the chain. Then we may learn algebra. Then we may learn calculus. But it's a stepwise process. Again, when you're in the first grade, you learn certain skills, as you know, learn what the numbers are. You can count a certain amount of number. You learn little by little, step by step, and each grade builds on the grade before, just like each life builds on the life we had before. So we come in already prepared. We come in already having some of that knowledge, some of that skill already ingrained in us. And when we see Picasso, he went through the first stages, you know, the 7 periods fairly quickly. 4 years here, 4 years here, 4 years here, 5 years here. It's as if he was going through a review process of his previous lives, a review process of what he had previously learned. Let's say a quick brush up of what, no pun intended, a quick brush up of what he had covered previously. And he's then able to progress and build on it, incorporate it, and actually become the actual genius production artist that he became. And we also, as humanity, went through all kinds of training as far as going through all our religious training. We did it in the same way. So what does Picasso have to do with us? He basically is showing as a textbook case of the process we go through every day. We may not realize that's what we're doing. However, that is what we are doing. And we do have guardians. We do have the mechanism of influences that gives us energies and frequencies when we need it, how we need it. And of course, we have the knowledge book that allows us to get those energies at a very dosage and need as we need it, and protects us from anything that could actually harm us. We are getting hit with tremendous amount of energies because we need to evolve quickly. We need to be able to progress very quickly, because time is short and we are running out of time as far as getting our act together and unifying as humanity. So the knowledge book is here to help us in this. And the knowledge book is here in this program. The call to friendship is actually unifying all the knowledge that we have and all the art that we have on this planet into one unified whole into one totality and connecting it to the central union of suns, which is the dimension of the All-Merciful, which is in the light universe. So we are here on a path. We are here all together. We are here trying to unite people so that everyone actually understands what is happening, how it is happening, and what our part in it is. Every one of us, every single one of us, not only humans, but everything that exists, living or non-living, everything that exists is here with a mission. And we need to realize that we do have a mission, that we do have something to accomplish, and figure out and learn what that mission is and actually carry it out and finish it. So I think that's about all that we have for today. Until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek. Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity, and its time of transition to the Golden Age that provided the truth and energies and frequencies. Now, she shares information from and answers questions about the Knowledge Book with you each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit Marge at usa.theknowledgebook.net.